Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
Hey.
Hey. That hurts.
Hey.
Hello, and welcome aboard Flight Radio Dale number 39.
This week in music history, the boss celebrates a birthday.
This week on the charts, the top 7 most added songs.
This week's campus report has something kind of to do with Arcade Fire.
This week in music technology, iTunes Radio, Twitter Music, and on September 24th, something will happen.
The brand new single, Those Days Are Dead, from The Reason.
And in part 2, we have a special guest, president of MDM Recordings, Mr. Mike Denny.
Boom. Just joking. Ooh. Love you, Mike.
That's staying in.
This week, well, hi. This week, welcome. Welcome to This Week in Music History. We are going to jump right into it. So September 19th, 1951, born on this day, Daniel Lanois.
Ooh. I liked the French.
Daniel Lanois.
Daniel.
Lanois.
Lanois. Producer and singer. He's produced such beautiful albums from artists like Peter Gabriel, Brian Eno, U2, Robbie Robertson, and Bob Dylan. He also has a lot of solo stuff that he's done that I'm a fan of. Also a big fan of his work with U2. So thumbs up, happy birthday, Daniel Lanois.
He's a Hamilton boy, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. And U2 actually did some work there for Unforgettable Fire.
September 20th, 2005, Canadian J.D. Fortune beat two other finalists to become the new lead singer with INXS after a worldwide search to replace the late Michael Hutchence. INXS held auditions in 6 continents as part of a reality TV series, and spoilers, it didn't end well, but...
And I'd like to clarify, India, who's hot, J.D. Fortune or Michael Hutchence?
Michael Hutchence!
Okay, good.
I was about to judge you on that.
Oh my god, I loved him. I wish that he was still here. September 21st, the number one song in Canada, Casey and the Sunshine Band. Shake, shake, shake your booty. That's not how they do it.
Shake your booty.
Shake your booty.
My memory of this song is Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh, yep. No.
That's funny. Shut up, Lou.
September 22nd, 1969. The band released their self-titled album, which peaked at number 9 on the U.S. chart and included Rag Mama Rag, Up on Cripple Creek, and The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. In 2009, the album was preserved into the National Recording Registry because the album was, quote, culturally, historically, or aesthetically important and reflects life in the United States.
Very cool.
The reason I thought this was interesting, because I was speaking to India the other day, and I, and prepare to laugh and judge me, I did not know that the band was Canadian, and on top of that, I didn't know that they had a song like Up on Cripple Creek. So I found it really neat that a Canadian band with a U.S. or an American member of the band was able to have this achievement with their album. So
this is the second time that you've mentioned Robbie Robertson today.
No, that's true.
In this
It's a
this
Robbie
week.
Robertson.
That's how I roll.
Day.
Yep.
September 23rd, 1949. Born on this day in the USA... Bruce Springsteen.
Woo!
U.S. singer, songwriter, The Boss.
That's my mom's birthday. I didn't realize
Born on September 23rd.
That's
in the USA. In the USA, specifically Philadelphia, isn't he? No, it's New Jersey.
New Jersey.
New Jersey, yeah.
In the dark. Sorry.
You either Jersey. Like Springsteen or you like Bon Jovi. New Jersey.
That's right. Or Kevin Smith. He's also from New Jersey.
Also the new house, the Housewives of New Jersey. Also
Who
Snooki.
Likes those?
Nobody likes
Snuffy. Anne Hathaway, I think that she's from New Jersey.
There's a lot of people from Jersey.
Anyway.
It's a cultural hotbed.
Of great people.
Yes.
September 21st. 24th.
First.
September 24th, 1991. Nirvana's album, Guesses, which one?
Never mind.
There you go.
The B-sides.
Was released in America, entering the chart at number 144.
Yeah, not very good.
No. The album peaked at number one in January of 92 and has now sold over 30 million copies worldwide.
Interesting how long that took, but it is their first album. Yeah. But was Nirvana to us right now is like, whoa.
It's a big deal.
But then they were like, any other band struggling to make it.
Yep.
And then once they made it, they didn't want to do it anymore.
My funny story about Nirvana is I remember being very upset with that stupid song because it dethroned my favorite artist, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, because he was doing really well with that Mr. Doubleina rap song. That was also pretty much the end of early 90s rap. You had rock on the charts from that point on.
I think you should put some crickets in there.
Yeah, fuck you.
Rue dropped the F-bomb this week. Who is the who, the ha, the homo sapien?
It's like Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Del the Funky Homo
Sapien. Ice Cube's cousin. He's the rapper on the Gorillaz album.
Okay,
he's in a band called
Ice
Deltron 3030 that was really popular in 2000 and they're coming back now. He's a rapper. Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina.
Oh!
Mr. Bob Dabalina.
I know that.
September 25th, 1980, John Bonham, drummer with Led Zeppelin, in case you didn't know, died at age 32 after a heavy drinking session. Bonzo was found dead at guitarist Jimmy Page's house of what was described as asphyxiation. There are details here after inhaling his own vomit after excessive vodka consumption. Apparently 40 shots in 4 hours.
Nah, I've done that, whatever.
Yeah, so, sad day.
Interesting. His numbers are the traditional numbers reverse. He was 32, but everybody was... Or is it 27?
27.
20. His numbers are Michael Jordan's number reversed.
When did Del the Funky Barber Homo Sapien
die?
Die.
No, I think he's still alive.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I think he's doing good.
A connection there.
Story. Anyways, that has been This Week in Music History, and we hope you have a musically historical week.
Or culturally
historical?
Culturally musical.
Week.
Weekly. Music day.
Listen to music.
Listen to more music, especially older stuff.
Like the band, who are Canadian.
And Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Who is not?
Who is not?
I mixed up Del Barber, that's what I did. I said Del the Barber Funky Homo Sapien. Oh my god. Welcome to This Week on the Charts. I'm Amber, and I do this every week, so hopefully you know who I am by now. So this week, instead of looking at the BDS charts, I pulled up the MediaBase Most Added list. So basically what that is a list that's sent out every week by MediaBase, and MediaBase is an awesome place where you can go and not only take a look at charts, so they have radio charts a lot like BDS does, but you can also track radio stations' playlists, you can check out your artist's song, how many times it was spun in total by a station, what time of day it was spun, what kind of audience it reached, and a whole bunch of other really cool stats. So MediaBase every week will send out a list of songs that are the most added songs that week at radio. And radio stations will submit their total list of ads, and they tally them all up, and we break it down by format. So here is the list of the most added songs on Canadian radio, according to MediaBase, this past week. So for country, the number one most added song was Gord Bamford's When Your Lips Are So Close, and that's coming off the heels of him doing very well at last week's CCMA Awards. For AC radio, the most added song was Avicii's Wake Me Up. And that's interesting because that song has been out for a little while, but it's obviously starting to make waves on AC radio after doing so well at Hot AC and CHR. Hot AC most added is Headley's Anything. There's no surprise there. That's a new song and they're doing very well. The top 40 most added song, no surprise here either, Miley Cyrus with Wrecking Ball. No comment there. On my behalf. Active Rock most added, Headstones, Far Away From Here. I believe that is a new one from them. Alternative Rock most added, Arcade Fire with Reflector. And there's a lot of buzz about that, and they are doing really well. And I believe that one already is in the top 10 of modern rock, or alternative rock, and it only came out last week. And finally,
with all of each format having their number one most added song, they also have the list of the most added song across all formats. And that song is Gord Bamford's When Your Lips Are So Close. And I believe he had over 30 ads. So that is a look at this week's most added songs, according to Mediabase, on Canadian radio. Thank you so much. And that's it for... Or, no, see you next... Oh, crap. I said that's it.
See you next week on the charts.
And see you next week for This Week on the Charts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Campus Report. As I said, this week's report will have something to do with Arcade Fire, who have had a lot of buzz this week with Reflector, but that is not what we're talking about. I'm actually going to look at the top jazz charts for this week, which are only submitted by about 11 stations this week, but you will find two members of Arcade Fire on the charts. So the first is number one, Sarah Neufeld, and her album Hero Brother. Who knew that they also had side projects? There you go. Number two on the jazz charts, the Dave Robbins Electric Band with Zap. Number three, Gypsophilia Horska. Number four, Sultans of String Symphony. Number five, the Garfuna Collective, Ayo. I like saying that. Ayo. Number six is Colin Stetson, touring member of Arcade Fire, with his album New History Warfare Volume 3. Then number eight, Craig Peterson and Joel Kerr, It's a Free Country. Number nine, Shan Kenner, The Behavior of Vibration. And number 10, the Ryan Oliver Quartet with Strive. So those are your top 10 jazz albums for the week. Wondering, do you listen to jazz music? If you do, let us know.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new section of the podcast. Instead of doing a blog or a podcast review, I'm going to do more along the lines of music, tech news, or some online information that has happened in the past week so I can keep you up to date. There will probably be some podcasts and blog recommendations, but that won't be the point of it anymore. So here are three things that I found this week that I thought were kind of interesting. iTunes Radio launched yesterday. It's an internet radio service that lets you create stations and stream music on all of your iOS devices. Now, that was Wednesday the 18th. It was bundled with the latest iOS update. Many people have switched to Android over the last few years, including all of my roommates. However, I haven't heard nearly the buzz about their Google Play Music All Access service as iTunes Radio has gotten. I will have a proper report next week about how well it works. But the early buzz is saying that it may be instrumental in increasing sales with a tie-in to iTunes. It may be a new path for music discovery and potentially will help indies and buzz bands get more exposure. Advanced predictions are what you could probably expect. Everything from it will change music to meh. So we'll have to see what it looks like. Twitter Music has a new Spotify app and playlists on a music streaming service, Ardio. We talked about Twitter Music on a previous podcast. It scans your Twitter feed and finds the most popular trending music or the music that your followers are listening to, and also introduces you to new acts by looking at what emerging artists are trending across the social network. Now, they are clearly trying to generate interest by connecting themselves with larger subscription services. Ardio is the one that is available in Canada. You can't get Spotify here. It's also the one that I use. So maybe Twitter Music will get the buzz it deserves. It's a very cool app for music discovery. So if you're a techie person, you should probably check it out. And finally, sort of just an interesting one that I discovered recently. Not as much tech news, but a story about a long con viral marketing campaign that has totally inspired me to think differently about how to spread the word. There is a YouTube channel called Pronunciation Book that, up until July 9th of this year, has spent about 3 years teaching us how to pronounce words like jojoba or Megan Fox in American English.
Nyan cat. Nyan. Cat. Nyan cat.
The video shows the word in black on a white background, features a very atonal voice pronouncing the word. On July 9th, instead of a word, it was a number 77.
and the voice said,
"Something is going to happen in 77 days.
Now, the countdown has continued, including short stories and poems and other things that have been included, and it will end on September 24th, when the countdown will end and presumably something will happen. Up until the 77 video, there was a small following, since the channel was just really bizarre, but now there's a cult following trying to decipher what everything means. They found a spectrographic image in the silences at the end of the video, and other clues that lead people to believe that it may be a viral marketing campaign towards a new alternative reality game. Now, alternative reality games are interactive, networked narrative games. They use the real world as a platform and use transmedia storytelling to deliver a story that may be altered by participants' ideas or actions. That's from Wikipedia. Essentially, it's a game where the participants will change the story, but they sort of interact with it as it goes on. The form is defined by intense player involvement with a story that takes place in real time and evolves according to participants' responses. Now, if this is true, and that's what this is, it may be the longest con viral marketing campaign ever. It started in April of 2010. Now, if that doesn't inspire you to think differently about how to promote your own music release and come up with big ideas that grow a targeted, small audience over a long time, I don't know what will. So, next week, I'll let you know what happened. The reason. The reason. The reason. Those days are dead from Hollow Tree.
Had a chance to sit down with our good friend Mike Denny. Mike Denny is the president of MDM Recordings, and MDM Recordings is a label that we have been working with now for a few years,
And one of the artists we worked with, the very first artist we worked with on MDM Recordings, was Chad Brownlee. And we've had lots of success with several other artists, including Jess Moskaluk, Haley, Wyatt, and the list goes on from there. So we've known Mike Denny even before starting with Chad Brownlee's career. There was an artist we worked with before called Alex J. Robinson that we had a connection through Mike, through her. And I guess we just wanted to learn about Mike and his career, and we wanted to share that with you, his background in sales and why he started MDM Recordings, why he's working in country music. This conversation happened just after the CCMAs, so I know Mike has some good stuff from that weekend. So without further ado, here's Rue's conversation with Mike Denny.
Are you awake? Are you still waking up?
I slept in myself until like after nine, so tired.
Just recovering from it, eh?
Well, it's just 5 days of... Well, for me, I was there Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you don't really unwind until Sunday night when it's all done.
Yeah. And how late are you up, usually? All night?
The last night I was up all night. Went to bed at 7:30 in the morning.
But did you have a flight that day, or was it...
3 o'clock. So, crap. I mean, I got a couple hours sleep, but not enough to shake off the...
Yeah.
The cobwebs.
Yeah.
I'm on the board of directors too, so I'm getting pulled in a million different ways with that.
Yeah.
We got artists going all over the place, and then we had our party on the Saturday night, which was outside.
Mm-hmm.
It poured rain all Saturday afternoon, so I was like, what am I going to do?
You just stressed the whole day, like, yeah.
Stressed, but then it cleared up and it was fine, so it was good.
So how tough is it to balance being on the board for something like the CCMAs and having a pile of artists and trying to wrangle it all?
Well, when I ran, I felt it was kind of crucial to making sure that we were represented and had a voice on the board. Not that we get any favoritism, we don't.
Yeah.
I've come to realize that pretty quickly. But it's nice to be involved in the direction that the CCMAs are going.
Oh, cool.
For sure. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And be a part of the successes of putting on an awards show, which is the only other genre outside of the multi-genre Juno Awards in Canada. So we have a lot of people looking at us. We're doing a lot of things right. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Has it changed a lot? Like, when did you get involved with the board?
I'm going into my second year.
Second year?
On the board. So I'm still learning a lot in terms of the processes of how artists get selected, the financial statements of the CCMA, the protocol of how things work, and the people who are on the board. It's a good bunch of people, but it does take a little while to get everybody
acclimatized to kind
of
thing. Yeah. So what is the big difference, you would think, between MDM and working on the board? Is there a huge difference between the work you would do on the label and what you do on the board?
Oh, yeah, it's totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, the board is very much focused on the Canadian country music industry.
Mm-hmm.
For 52 weeks a year. 51 if you take out the Christmas break. MDM Recordings, I'm involved in every facet of the company, but for a select group of artists that are signed that I believe in and have taken the steps necessary to sign them to the company, whether it's management capacity, distribution capacity, or straight on record deals for those acts.
And when did you get involved in the music industry? Yeah, as early as it is, even if it's like running for coffee for someone or something.
Let's say my first job was with a company called Handelman, and they were a rack jobber putting music into department stores.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, the two biggest records were Christopher Cross, Dirty Dancing. Christopher Cross, Sailing, and Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Movie. And it was the first time that CDs were coming out in conjunction with the LP. So that should tell you how long. 26 years.
26 years? And so you started at Handelman. Did you work there for a while?
I worked there long enough to realize that they had a conference in Toronto. And at that point, there was 7 or 8 major record companies in Canada, and they all did product presentations.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one to go was CBS Records. And they brought out Ronnie Hawkins, and he started playing and blew the transformer in the hotel. And the vice president of sales at that time was Don Oates. And I was just focused on this guy, how he dealt with the situation. And I went over and introduced myself and talked to him for almost an hour.
Really?
And at that night, I made a commitment that not only did I want to work in the music industry, but I wanted to work for that man.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 years later, I was national sales manager at Sony Music Canada and reporting directly to Don.
All right. Cool. And what was that like? What were you doing in those days?
Sales. My background is sales and marketing.
Okay.
So, in everything, too. When I went to Sony Music, it was for sales of non-traditional stuff. So putting music into drugstores and Blockbuster video stores and all the rest, like grocery stores. Anything that was non-traditional outside HMV and Sunrise and all the rest of that stuff. And it was great. I had a lot of fun there. But things change in corporate environments. And I moved over to Sony, over to Universal Music after that. Was there for 4.5 years doing sales in the branch, and then moved into national sales as a national sales manager of classical jazz and strategic marketing, which was a weird combination, but that's what they wanted me to do. And
So did that have anything to do with your tastes, or did they just basically say, we need you here?
I'm one of those people who can adapt to the genre.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. When I was doing kids video, I really immersed myself in kids video. I knew everything that was going on with the kids market, who's watching Barney, Elmo, and all the rest of that stuff. When I went to Universal and moved into classical and jazz, I was fully immersed in the jazz scene in Canada and, hanging out at the top of the Senator and going to see jazz shows and while I was going to Montreal. And the classical thing, I actually really liked that. It was cool. Totally different, totally unique, but I could appreciate the talents that they brought to the table. And it helped me in terms of being able to sell it properly to the customer base that we had and representing it within Universal Music from a national level.
Yeah.
Making sure that it was a priority with the other sales reps and other branches across Canada.
Do you feel that, I know that what they teach a lot of people now, and at least if they go to the schools like Harris or Travis or anything like that, or just sort of experience, they say that you don't really try not to get comfortable somewhere because the only way to move through the industry is to bounce from place to place. Do you feel that's true, or did you go through that in your experience?
Yeah, and at first I thought it was me,
just
not being able to hold a job.
Yeah,
but the reality is that the corporate world changes every time the sales drop and you don't hit your targets. So I had that happen to me at Sony Music. I had it happen again at Universal Music when the internet and illegal sales started to really take over.
Yeah.
And being in somewhat of a luxury position within the company, I was one of the first ones to get let go. But fortunately, everything that's happened to me in my career has taken me to the next step higher up the rung and has allowed me to meet some incredible people in every facet of the industry.
Yeah.
So I'm extremely well-versed now, and if I don't know somebody, I know somebody who can get that person on the phone for me.
Okay.
And that comes through 25, 26 years of doing this. So when I left Universal Music, I ended up getting hired as the director of sales and marketing for Fusion 3, Just In Time Records. And I had met Jim West, who was the owner of the company, who owns Just In Time, which is the biggest jazz label in Canada, Canadian jazz label. I'd met him once.
Yeah.
Quick hi, hello. And I was looking for a job. Sent him a resume, and he called me back in 20 minutes, and we had lunch. And the next week, I was in Montreal. And after that, I was doing that, which kind of opened up everything that allowed me to get to MDM Recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I was in Toronto. I was dealing with the agents. I was dealing with radio. I was dealing with media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was dealing with the accounts. I was, at that point, became a fully rounded individual in terms of the Canadian music industry. But once again, sales and dictates your future. And Fusion 3 was an amazing company that carried catalog and a lot of catalog, and the stores were just slashing the amount of catalog that they were going to carry. And I was fortunate or unfortunate enough to be one of the only people in the company that got packaged off.
Yeah.
6 months before the company went bankrupt, but I had already incorporated MDM Recordings and had already started to facilitate the molding of what this company was going to look like.
So the seeds were kind of planted at that point.
It was planted. A couple things happened at Fusion 3. One, I met my business partner now, Mitch Merritt.
Mm-hmm.
We signed a distribution deal at that time with Aaron Prichette, who was probably one of the hottest Canadian country guys going. He put out an album called Big Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's 6 CCMA nominations, a Juno nomination on that record. And we took Aaron from 6,500 units sold to around 23, 24,000 units,
mm-hmm.
sold, which was amazing. And Aaron and Mitch and I were like brothers. It just was one of those weird relationship things that just kind of happened. And they brought me into the country music world, and I started to meet the people and started to see what was going on. Mm-hmm. I attended the CCMAs for the first time, and I just fell in love with it. It's just an awesome organization and group of people in Canada that is the Canadian country music industry.
Amber was saying that beyond other genres, that she knows it's country music has more of a community.
Yeah.
And sort of like it's more like a big family rather than a bunch of sort of people battling each other.
Yeah, I mean, I go to the Junos every single year, and the Junos to me is extremely segregated. Everything is broken down, and if you're not in that clique, you don't go to that party.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in that clique, you don't go to that party. The CCMAs is you go to every party.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody does. You support each other in your endeavors, and everybody knows that tonight this is what we're doing. We're going
mm-hmm.
here, tomorrow night we're here. And the next night we're here, which is really cool. And that's how you get to make some amazing relationships with people as well, too, in every area of the business,
because
they're all there.
Were you consciously thinking, I need to network? Or was it just, were you just being natural, just meeting people? Because a lot of people are sort of informed, you know, networking is the most important thing. Have your business cards, meet as many people as possible. Were you thinking that way, or was it you were just being
when I started
natural?
The company or in my career?
Leading up to that, in your career?
I was in sales,
yeah.
So you always had to talk the talk
mm-hmm.
To make things happen. That's how you got your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, oddly enough, when I was in sales, it was all about hitting quota. Hit quota, market share, market share, market share,
mm-hmm.
all cost market share. Which is hilarious because it's the exact opposite now that I run my own company, where it's about the music and all the rest of that stuff. But just through being active and being out there, I was meeting people on a regular basis. We would host showcase events and have to go to shows 5-6 times a week sometimes and make sure that we had people out and that retail folks were coming up to check. It was a little bit of a different time back then.
Yeah.
But it did allow you to meet people, develop contact base, and as I moved around, so did everybody else that was in the industry and
mm-hmm.
still is in the industry at that point. So it is by far the number one most important thing in terms of meeting people,
mm-hmm.
developing those relationships, and not burning a bridge.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do sometimes.
Yeah.
That's
was there an aha moment when you felt your view of the industry switched from hitting your quotas to the music? Was it just through MDM or?
It was through MDM.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's different when your name's on it and all of a sudden you got to pay all the bills. I had a vision for what I wanted MDM Recordings to be.
Mm-hmm.
When I started it, I was scared as hell because
mm-hmm.
I didn't think I could get it off the ground. It was the start of the recession. I had come from a corporate background making really good money. I was a $100,000 a year guy when I was 32 years old. And that's the corporate environment that I was in, and sales technically, you know, usually paid more than other parts
mm-hmm.
of companies. So when when we incorporated, I never thought I'd get it off the ground. But I knew that I was getting phone calls from a great artist that were established artists in Canada, as well as some up-and-coming developing artists in the country genre
mm-hmm.
that I really wanted to work with. So I took the plunge. I went to the CCMAs, which were in Winnipeg that year,
mm-hmm.
and I came out of there with a roster of 5 artists, 3 new ones and 2 established ones,
mm-hmm.
that allowed me to generate some income to get the company up and off the ground.
Interesting.
I don't do that anymore. I will not sign an artist for straight income.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well, because the passion may not be there.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah, and I've gotten burned on it.
Yeah.
So you just, at that point, if I'm not passionate about the music, it doesn't go any further.
Mm-hmm. Now, which artists are you working with right now, primarily?
From the management side of things,
yeah.
Chad Brownlee,
mm-hmm.
Our guitar shredder, Haley,
mm-hmm.
and we are just moving into a management deal with Jess Moskaluk.
Okay.
On the record company front, in terms of artists that are signed directly to MDM Recordings, it's Chad, it's Haley, it's Jess. a band called the Mandevilles. Mm-hmm. And then on the production or on the production and distribution end of things, we have Robin O'Reilly, Bryce Pallister, Wyatt, the Heartbroken, Clayton mm-hmm. Bellamy, and Charlie Major. Charlie Major, we just moved into a license deal, cool. actually, for this Greatest Hits record that just came out.
Now, the traditional thought of a label is that the label takes in the talent, develops it to a certain point, and then kind of puts it out there, markets it, distributes it. And a lot of people are sort of saying that in the modern day, the major labels aren't doing this anymore. The major labels just kind of take and throw out and kind of leave it at that. Do you feel that with MDM Recordings, are you trying to sort of take the role as of a label, a traditional old school label, and develop the artists?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And there's a two-pronged reason for that. Yeah. We were approached by EMI Music prior to the sale to Universal Music to create an entity that would support up-and-coming Canadian country artists under that umbrella. So basically, they were getting bombarded with one-off deals, walking through the doors, everybody looking for production and distribution mm-hmm. agreements. Well, that's a burden on your structure as a major company because mm-hmm. you just don't have the time or the resources to be able to allocate that. So what we did was we came up with an infrastructure that was MDM Recordings that, with an investment into the company, allowed me to secure the various different key entities that you needed. Mm-hmm. So Dale speaking for radio, Holly yeah. Spolsky, HC consultant for media support, Sheila Hash at Media Vandals for website, graphic design, online, social, viral networking mm-hmm. stuff. I have now two administrative assistants and an intern that are involved in terms of grant applications and all the rest of that stuff, because mm-hmm. the major labels in Canada can't attract that funding.
Yeah.
We, with the success that we have had with some of our artists, are a level 4 record company with Factor. We are tapped into the star maker world, and we can access funds that the major labels can't.
Mm-hmm.
So for a small investment on their part, we work together to develop the talent and put it through the ranks. So when mm-hmm. we get to the level of somebody like a Chad Brownlee, where we're 10 singles out and their first single from the third record, we've now upstreamed a good portion of that to Big Brother, because mm-hmm. you will get more traction
yeah.
that way. And,
yeah.
and you know, we've had the conversations with the people that it was like, I mean, we're not taking you off this because you did a bad job.
Yeah.
You actually did a great job.
That's where we got to this point.
And Mr. Yeah. Lennox has recognized that he can take this to the next level. And at
yeah.
that point, it's a business decision that you have to make.
Yeah.
But that's part of the process of developing talent as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's costly. It takes time. And it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
And each artist is different as well, too. But we are committed as a Canadian company to developing Canadian country artists.
What are the big challenges right now? The
money.
Big major ones, money?
It's always money.
Yeah.
Even with the Factor funding, you still have to spend it before you get it.
Yeah.
Radio, mm-hmm. getting new artists on the radio is harder than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just release a single, which is what we used to do. And,
yeah.
And wait for radio to add it to start kicking in the rest of the marketing initiatives.
Yeah.
You have to go in there with a full plan now of attack that is going to get buy-in from the music directors at the radio stations
mm-hmm.
to be able to support your act, not only today, but 6 months, 8 months, 24 months down the line, because
mm-hmm.
that's what they're looking to invest in, is artists that are going to be there for the long haul, not the one-hit wonders
yeah.
Yeah. that we've all seen.
Yeah. How important is digital in the country music world? Because it's
digital sales,
digital promotion, digital marketing,
becoming more important all the time.
Yeah,
the country genre is probably the last genre to move away from the physical and get into the digital scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has a lot to do with the demographics of the genre and who's listening to it. But we've seen an explosion in iTunes digital single sales
mm-hmm.
This year. I'm talking like 1,000% increases in terms of what
yeah.
we saw in previous album sales and single sales. And our Facebook and Twitter and all those numbers, YouTube subscriber numbers, are going up for every single artist that
yeah.
we have. So it is becoming a major component for marketing strategies and launch strategies.
Well, Jess Moskaluk pretty much kicked off her career with,
yeah.
with online, so you can sort of see how that works into...
Yeah, Jess is a total anomaly. I mean, we're over 20 million YouTube views on the various different videos that she's done. She actually has a bigger fan base outside of her home territory in Canada,
yeah.
which is awesome.
Yeah.
And hopefully at some point we'll be able to exploit that. But right now we're focusing on really developing, changing her from a YouTube artist, molding her from a YouTube artist into a recording artist, which is, it's difficult because she's, you know, as a YouTube artist, you do it pretty much on your own. And now she has a group of people surrounding her that kind of freaks her out every once in a while because, you know, she doesn't have to do anything, everything now.
Yeah.
She has people who are experts in various different areas helping her, which is a big step for any artist in their career. But that, again, is part of the artist development phase. I want her to be concentrating on writing, performing the best songs that she can possibly do and or find, and all the rest of that stuff that goes on the creative side. We'll look after the back end now.
What do you see as the challenges for bringing Canadian country music to the world? Because Canada's pretty good at exporting pop, rock. Some country has managed to break through over the last 20, 30 years, but not so much, I guess, in the last 5 years or so.
Nashville is key to creating international stars.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Nashville is very clicky.
Yeah.
And it's, you have to be from the South. I mean, we've sat with presidents of Nashville-based record companies and VPs of A&R, and they're very nice and they're very friendly, and it's great conversation. You can go in and you can play, but 20 minutes later, they're sending you a note saying, "Hey, thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
You know, help we need." What we're doing now within our camp is we spend a lot of time in Nashville, number one, because we're looking for the best co-writers, the best songs that we can possibly find. We've plugged into a network of Nashville-based producers who we are now co-producing with. We did this for Chad Browning, working with Reed Shippen, who just won a Grammy for Little Big Town, and Jess Moskaluk's new record was recorded by an artist and signed writer to Universal Music Publishing, Nashville, by the name of Corey Crowder. They are now becoming our voice within Nashville. So the Canadian flag is not even mentioned anywhere in any of these conversations. These guys are now going into the A&R departments and the publishing companies going, "You got to take a listen to this." And then when people buy in, it's like, holy cow. And the flag waving of being from Canada, it opens the door a little bit more for the opportunities to at least go in and play, do a country in the border thing where they can see the artist and then make a decision, as opposed to saying no right off the bat because it's from Canada.
Yeah, and is that, that's pretty common, eh? Just the name alone is enough to...
Very common.
Yeah.
Very common.
I guess to close up a bit, if there was somebody out there that was interested in following the same path, or at least achieving at a point where they are running a management company that also serves as many of the parts that a label traditionally did, what would be three major steps you would think for them to start off? Three things they should think about before they set off on the journey?
Really look at law school or a dentist or a doctor. I'm doing what I'm doing now because of 25 years of learning this business. And I see people who start management companies and independent record labels and distribution companies or distribution networks, and they don't have the understanding of what it takes and the commitment that it takes. This is 24/7. We as a label have dropped a single on Christmas Day the last 4 years in a row, and we will do it again this year. As a level of commitment to what it takes to keep a business going. Number one, passion overrides anything. The minute you start doing anything for money is the minute that all hell's going to break loose and it's going to go sideways on you. Don't bite off more than you can chew. If you can find one really good artist and develop it that way, do it that way, as opposed to us who have, you know, a roster of 10 or 11, because it's hard. I forgot one of their band too, the Lovelocks. The distribution piece, their press release just went out on this week. And just understand what you're dealing with. Artists are... they're a different breed sometimes. and balancing the business and the creative side is can be really, really, really tricky. But I'm a firm believer that if you are passionate about what you're doing and work hard, then the dollars will follow.
Cool.
Fortunately, it has for us.
Excellent. Yay, thank you, Mike.
Cool.
Read our blogs and see our client list at dalespeaking.com. You can find us on Twitter at @Dale_speaking, and we're on Facebook as well. And check out dalespeaking.podomatic.com for back issues episodes of Radio Dale.
The XX. The X. X. The XX.